It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Sage Rosenfels.
Good physical stature. Can see. And looks to be smart with the football.
12-year NFL quarterback.
Rosenfels, rolling, near side, throwing for the end zone, touchdown!
Our Tuesday morning quarterback.
There's just so many combinations that a defense can do to confuse a quarterback, even a veteran quarterback. That is the complex, deep science of football that very few people understand.
Sage Rosenfels,
brilliant!
With Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Fan 4-packs are a fantastic way to enjoy Chicago Wolves hockey. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, 1 large popcorn, and 1 low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. They are winners. They are the Wolves. Joining us now is indeed Sage Rosenfels on Twitter at SageRosenfels18. With KFan, he's a writer, he's a broadcaster, he's an analyst, and an interesting political voice on Twitter, I might say, as well. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from at Alpamonte Ford. Well, Sage, I don't know what there is to talk about when a longtime career veteran backup quarterback gets into a game and looks like kind of what we knew Chase Daniel is and was.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, he did a lot of good things in this football game, and there was a couple mistakes, obviously, and a couple missed throws here and there. But you know, he hit some big balls, down the field, and was very accurate on some of those throws that sometimes Mitchell Trubisky is not as accurate. So I would say, all in all, he played good football. But winning football is like I always talk about with Minnesota with Kirk Cousins is their stats are one thing, but winning football is that stuff that happens at the end of a game, at the end of two minute drills, third downs, red zone. That's where you really have to play your best football. And obviously the end, the way that game ended. With the interception, obviously that was but that's always tough because I thought for the most part he did play winning football throughout that game.
He's Sage Rosenfels. He's our Tuesday quarterback, brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. Believing is seeing. Schedule your free consultation today. Sage, I don't know how to ask this without sounding somewhat snarky, especially since I've never really played quarterback, but I am genuinely interested. What happens to a quarterback when they throw it right at the linebacker's numbers? Like, what happened there? Because you're talking about playing winning football. That can't include turnovers. What happened?
Well, on that play, they have what I would always call a double hammer concept. And what basically is the underneath guy, the inside guy, runs about a 5-yard hitch, and then the outside guy runs a square in. And basically that linebacker either squeezes that inside 5-yard hitch, or he sort of sinks back into the middle of the field, which takes away the in route, and then that hitch is open. So it's sort of a one or the other, sort of a high low on those linebackers. In this case, I'm not sure if it was bad spacing or what, but the offensive players were fairly close to each other, so there wasn't much separation between that in or out and that inside hitch. And I think he was just trying to anticipate, and it ended up, sometimes if you sort of look at that hitch route, you just sort of throw it, hoping that linebacker is going to drive, on that hitch. Favre was great at that. And then you end up whizzing the ball right behind their ear, and you're good to go. But on this situation, I think he was anticipating that linebacker coming up on the hitch route, but he didn't. He stayed back in the middle. If anything, he actually went in the other direction a little bit, ended up being right into his chest. So, I've seen that happen, many, many times in practices and in games before. Obviously as a quarterback, you want to be, probably a little more conservative in the sense of, in that type of situation with this type of defense, interceptions are really the killers. And obviously that was a forced throw, but, it's early in the football game. Sometimes quarterbacks do throw interceptions, and that was early in the football game. And I thought he did a pretty good job bouncing back from that and playing good football literally into the, the very last, one of the last plays of the game, the interception on that corner route.
Yeah, and that looked like a little desperation on his part combined with a receiver coming off a route and flattening a route in a way he probably shouldn't have. And it just, somebody else might have picked it off even had the route been good. But it was interesting to me, like you say, balancing the idea of not making a mistake with the fact that, you know, you're not running the ball, you got to get it down the field. Somebody's got to do something.
This offense, you know, very much is controlled and run by the quarterback. I mean, obviously Nagy's calling the plays on the sidelines, and they do so much hurry-up stuff that they're on the ball, and he can still call those plays from the sidelines with the 15-second rule and all that. But they are really dependent on the quarterback to do everything in this. They don't run the ball very well, which means they don't really do much to any real play action. You know, that's the whole thing. And, you know, be able to throw the ball deep down the field, you have to have the linebackers and everybody step up and play the run first. It allows the quarterback to have more time, and they don't do that. So it means everything is sort of the, you know, he's like the point guard who has to dish it to everybody. And over the course of the game, you don't want your quarterback, you don't want to win or lose because of your, you know, backup quarterback. That's just the way it goes. And most backups are about 500 in their career. And I think Chase is somewhere around there. You know, he plays well in some games and doesn't play as well in other games. But, you know, does this Bears team want to rely on their quarterback to win them the football game? Seems like to me in this style of offense, that's the case. And, you know, even a guy like Chase, who's been around a long time, but he hasn't played in a, you know, a ton of games. He's not a, you know, 12 years, not Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or these guys who've seen everything. And, you know, on that play, I know what he saw. I think he was thinking it was going to be man-to-man. I think he was going to have that corner route. It ended up being zone, and you know, somebody who's got him, and it's at the end of the game. So you want to, you know, you're feeling like, man, we can come back. We're going to win this thing. We're going to win this game in London. It's going to be this great deal. And then you just sort of push it just a little bit, and just a little bit too aggressive. And you had the under route guy, and you end up misreading it. Thought it was man. Ended up being more of a cover three zone. So that corner just, you know, sank back, and he had his deep third. And the receiver did flatten it off, but you know, it ended up being just basically a fair catch for that cornerback, and then pretty much sealed the win for the Raiders.
Sage, we've been hollering about that offensive line for the better part of 2 days now, and I know the job for you is to watch the quarterback mostly, but I have to imagine you see something in the tackles, in the guards, and in the center. What's going on with this Bears offensive line, as best you can tell?
Well, yeah, as a quarterback, you see the line, you see everything, you see the line for sure, and you see if the receivers run sloppy routes. And you know, what I see is not great detail in the running game, if anything. But that's what I see. You know, there's a couple sacks in the football game. You know, one of them I would put on Chase Daniel. I thought there was a nice pocket in there. The line did a nice job. It wasn't a big pocket, but there was enough space for a quarterback to step up in it. He ended up going out the back door and ended up getting sacked. And so I sort of put that one on Chase. And another one was, you know, Long, the right guard. He had this real tough situation where he had two linebackers sort of right over him, and they both came for a second, and so he wasn't really sure which one he was going to take, mm-hmm. and the inside guy drops out. So then he ends up taking the other guy, which is sort of to his right, who ends up picking the tackle. And then the tackle, the defensive end comes around and gets that sack. And, you know, in a normal situation where he doesn't have those two linebackers, he can get his hands on the first linebacker and then pass them off to the tackle and then catch the looper coming around. So that, I tell you what, that was a well-designed defensive blitz by the Raiders in that one. Put him in a tough spot. And, you know, sacks do happen, but, you know, they're not always on the line. But, you know, I think their biggest issue, less pass protection, to me it's more the stuff in the running game. I mean, they just can't get the running game going. And I like the way the running backs run.
We hear a lot about the psychological effect of a running game that gets established and starts going downhill and what it means for all these athletes working together to know they're imposing their will. What does it mean in the opposite direction? What's the psychological effect of not being able to get it done, of being beaten physically at the point of attack over and over and over again? And how hard is that for an offense to overcome?
Well, linemen want to go forward. Offensive linemen prefer, if they could have no pass blocking the entire game, they'd love that. Come off, you know, 55, 65 times and just run block. Pass protection is tough for them. So, you know, a lot of things have to go right when you throw the football. And, you know, third and short situations or whatever, and linemen, of course, would always love to come off because, you know, the ball can be tipped at the line of scrimmage from a defensive lineman. Obviously, the receivers have to win. Obviously, the quarterback has to deliver the football. The blitz, you know, you have to have the right protection on for the right blitz. A lot of complexities in that passing game that can go wrong. If you can just line up and run the football like the San Francisco 49ers did last night, man, that's a great way to go for an offensive line because there's just fewer variables. There's sort of like less pressure, you know, put on those guys. And but they don't run the football. They don't even, not that they don't try, but they don't commit to it. They do a ton of three receiver stuff. You know, when they have Cohen and Montgomery in the game, Cohen really is a receiver. So they don't really commit to, you know, two tight ends, the fullback. They don't even play with a fullback. So, you know, the running the football it's definitely a throw to set up the run. It's definitely more sort of college, spread them out and run the ball and try to get good boxes. But, you know, that's not always easy. Having those tight ends, you know, helps out those tackles with double teams. When there's no tight end there, those tackles are by themselves against a superior athlete. And that's, to me, that's tough on the offensive line.
So is that what you need then in order to run the ball without a foot? Because we've heard a lot about the fullback and whether or not they need one, whether they need to change the alignments here. What is it that offense, an offense without a fullback, has to have in order to run the ball? Is that as simple as, like you said, tight ends helping out tackles, or is it just better play from tackles to begin with?
I think if you're going to have no tight ends on the field or very, you know, maybe just one who a lot of times is displaced, as in he's not next to the tackle, you have to have some monster tackles. You know, I remember when I was with the Vikings, they had Bryant McKinney, who was just a mountain of a man, and Phil Loadholt, who was also, I mean, those guys are both 6'8", 360. They're huge guys because you're taking on, you know, defenders by yourself, and they have to be able to move too. So it's a tough, it's a tough mix. You know, you see that there's various offenses around the league. This is one of more of those. This is that spread out offense, probably as much as anybody in the NFL. When you see all these zone schemes going on, like the LA Rams and the 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, their linemen don't have to be like that because they're constantly getting help, you know, from the tight ends, and they're constantly getting some help from, you know, obviously having that fullback in the game. So it's two different styles of offenses, and I actually think that since teams have gone to faster defenses, you know, smaller, faster linebackers. They're not as big as they used to be because everyone, they have the guard, tight ends that can really run, and running backs and all this man-to-man stuff. You know, some of those teams with the fullback are having success because they say, hey, you're a little bit lighter over there. You're not used to just taking on, you know, fullbacks who are, you know, downhill like a bowling ball right at you. Those guys don't like to get messy like that. And so teams are some of those teams start going back to the old school approach and taking advantage of a little bit of a lighter defense.
The famous Brian Billick line about dealing with a defensive lineman is you run at speed, you run away from strength. We know Khalil Mack is both, but judging from the game plan that was in evidence last week, he's a strength guy to them because John Gruden was moving things away from him, sprinting the quarterback away from him to start a play, just not allowing him to be as close to the ball to wreck the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. My rookie year, our first game of my rookie year, we played against San Diego, and Junior Seau was there. And there was this thought process as, do we run at Junior Seau? Because, you know, do you run at a great, you know, player who was totally in his prime at that point? Or do you run away from him? A lot of people would run away from him, but then you would realize that Junior would run everything down from the backside. So it was almost better to run at Junior Seau and, and sometimes even get, you know, maybe two guys on him or a guy and a half on him, and then maybe have the ball either bounce outside or cut back. But, you know, guys like Khalil Mack are special athletes. The fact that they can play the run and be powerful, but also can, you know, chase things down from behind. You have to game plan. And, the Bears are very, very lucky to have that. And teams definitely have to game plan for it.
Sage, appreciate you as always. Great catching up. We'll talk next Tuesday.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
That is Sage Rosenfels. And because it is Tuesday, that means coming up next, just a couple minutes, it's Paul Charchian, who knows more about fantasy football than anybody.
Yeah, we can get your waiver wire set. If you've got people out there on the waivers to go grab, maybe some buy low, sell high kind of conversation, maybe some quarterback clarity as well. Charch at fanball.com is coming up. Burnson McKnight on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Paul Charchian.
Tons of risk, tons of upside.
The leader at Fanball and League Safe.
The leader is right. The leader is right.
straight. We surrender our will as of this day.
Guiding you through the waiver wire.
Just hit the bike.
I picked it up off the waiver wire.
Mm-hmm. That's stealing.
Fantasy Sports Hall of Famer.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Charge.
Championship.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Time for Paul Charchian of Fanball.com, LeagueSafe.com, NK Fan. He is on Twitter at Paul Charchian. And Charge, if you don't mind, we got a little bit of breaking news here outside of football. I just want to get to this. I want to read this statement that has been sent out from the Chinese government and translated into English by CNBC. It's just two paragraphs. I'll read it in its entirety. We have noticed that Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, who is participating in an event in Japan, has responded to Houston Rockets general manager Morey's post of inappropriate Hong Kong-related remarks. We are strongly dissatisfied and we oppose Silver's claim to support Morey's right of free expression. We believe that any speech that challenges national sovereignty and social stability is not within the scope of freedom of speech. To this end, CCTV Sports Channel of the Central Radio and Television Administration has decided to immediately suspend the current broadcast arrangements of the NBA preseason China games and immediately investigate all cooperation and exchanges involving the NBA.
Well, yeah, that means the NBA is real close to losing $4 billion of business because that government does not recognize freedom of speech the same way this government and society does.
That escalated quickly.
Real quick, $4 billion up for grabs and probably gone.
Wow.
Hi, okay. Charge.
Wow.
Watch how fast the NBA bends the knee. It's going to be instant. You know, when it comes down to money versus human rights, we know how this thing usually goes.
Yep.
And, you know, the poor people of Hong Kong are just on an island. They get no help from anybody. They get no support because China has so many levers to pull and they're so economically rich that, you know, countries can't support them. It's really sad that the NBA, I mean, we're talking about a basic human right to, you know, free speech. You know, it's amendment, you know, this is the First Amendment. This is the most important thing in the world, is the ability to express yourself. And the NBA can't even come out and support the ability to have free speech. It's sad that money is so important that you can't support somebody's right to express themselves. It's absurd and disturbing, and it tells us everything about what China's really all about, which is maintaining the status quo. You know, there are people on top of this dictatorship that are extraordinarily rich and extraordinarily powerful, and they're going to do whatever it takes to stay that way.
I love it, Charge. Flex it a little bit. I'm digging it.
It bugs me.
And it bugs
really,
me too.
It's really sad.
It bugs
it's
me
really
too.
Sad.
There's no simple answers here. Kind of, this. Here's your butchered segue for the day. Kind of like the waiver wire right now.
Oh,
there aren't a lot of... There are, here you go. I got it for you. Don't worry. I'll butter up this bread. I mean, gee, man, this is not a target-rich environment, this waiver wire this week.
There isn't. I'll give you, there's three guys worth mentioning, and let's just zip through these three, and then let's move on to some other NFL stuff. If you need a quarterback this week, four teams off on bye, Kyle Allen goes up against Tampa, a secondary that has been a disaster over the past month. Their last four opponents, all inconsistent passers, dominating the Bucs with an average of 375 passing yards and two touchdowns. Teddy Bridgewater hadn't thrown more than two touchdowns in a game. Well, he'd only done it once, and it was 2015. He just threw four touchdowns against Tampa. So you can go to war with him if you need to. There's one wide receiver I think people should look into. Kiki Cutie for Houston is now he was coming off an ACL injury, and he's finally worked himself back into a heavy spot of the rotation. Deshaun Watson's fantasy football's highest scoring quarterback. We want all of his weapons accounted for, and a potentially good matchup this week against Kansas City. And lastly, a tight end. Everybody's looking for tight end help. Hunter Henry's close to coming back. He's practicing now, and he's been released in over half of leagues. He's an elite tight end when healthy. The Chargers need him, and they need all the weapons they can get. They're banged up at two different receiver spots. So Hunter Henry's coming back. Might be this week, might be next week. He belongs on rosters.
A lot of Bears fans drafted David Montgomery awfully high in their fantasy draft. I know you did, Charge. And I don't think it's his fault that he's not a fantasy producer at the very least. We can talk about actual production, what it means to win in ball games a little later on. But what should David Montgomery owners do?
You know, I was more wrong on Montgomery and his usage than anything else going back to the preseason and, you know, what I was hoping and expected to see from him, and it just hasn't materialized. And I agree. I don't think it's necessarily his fault. I think it's been both underutilized, just 11 rushes last week against the Raiders in a close game. That was just, you know, I realized the Raiders got out to an early lead, but that shouldn't evaporate your running game by any means. And part of it's a bad offensive line play, and I'll put some of it on Montgomery, too. I mean, he's only averaging 3.5 yards per carry. That's not good enough either. So you roll all that together. And by the way, all coming off the bye, Mike Davis probably rolls into that week healthy. And now what? Are we looking at a three-man backfield again like we were in before Davis was hurt? Oh, man, depressing. Right now, you can't start David Montgomery. I know it's that. I don't think you drop him outright. But he's not startable at this point.
And how do you expand that to more with the Bears' offense right now? We know that Allen Robinson has become either the guy who's trusted or the guy who's closest to open.
Yeah.
None of the tight ends are producing. Tariq Cohen, who I think, you know, at the end of last year, you were very high on him going into this year, that the offense is so bad now that it's really suppressed any individual.
No, I agree with that. And I'm sure there's probably no small amount of debate about who your quarterback should be, even healthy, and that's part of what happens when the offense looks the way it has for this season. And Robinson's been the only receiver that's gotten anything resembling consistency and targets. He played 305 snaps this year, which is more than any other player on the entire offense. And he's, you know, after him, it's just been a mishmash of guys. They're getting so little out of Miller and Gabriel, just the one good game, and Javon Wims. Do I have to even think about Javon Wims? Javon Wims is second in snaps. It's come to this for an offense that has unfortunately really, really been a disappointment for fantasy owners. And it's really come down to just one reliable player. And Allen Robinson, frankly, he, even game in and game out, he hasn't been that reliable for fantasy use. And I don't see it changing in the short term.
What should people do with all the fancy, shiny Browns weapons we were promised heading into this season?
Panic,
yeah.
Mostly. I mean, Mayfield's been bad. Offensive line's has been bad as well. And then when he's under pressure, he's been terrible. He's coming. He just had a 100-yard game in a game in which they were behind a lot, and he should have passed more than he did. 100-yard game, probably the worst game of his career. He has 4 touchdowns on the season. Baker Mayfield, who I think everybody thought he was going to make the big leap in year 2. He's dead last in touchdowns among quarterbacks who have played every game this year. Dead last, Baker Mayfield. And here we're talking about all the weapons that they got added and how this offense was ready to explode. None of it's come to fruition. And now we get Seattle. It's a decent enough secondary that you don't even feel comfortable starting Baker Mayfield in that situation, either in a home game against Seattle on a short week. And you probably won't start him. And I hate to say it. You could drop Baker Mayfield. There are better guys out there potentially that you could go more with, and somebody else will pick him up, potentially start him, and maybe they suffer all the same things that you've been suffering with as a Baker Mayfield owner to this point.
How pleased are Christian McCaffrey owners, how is his insane production relative to what you expected?
Well, you know, we knew he'd be good. He was in the top 3 for pretty much everybody's rankings, and including mine, and that, you know, we knew he'd be good. What the difference is, he's on pace to touch the ball 450 times. That's not sustainable, and if they keep doing it, they'll run him into the ground. They can't keep doing that. Carolina's throwing the ball second least in the NFL. They have to start reversing some of that and getting some normalcy back into their passing game. Kyle Allen's been pretty good, and I think you'll see an uptick in his passes this week for some of the reasons we mentioned earlier. McCaffrey's in the MVP conversation. He should be, because he's carrying an entire team like many quarterbacks do that typically win this. One time roughly every 10 years, a non-quarterback wins the MVP award, and McCaffrey's in that discussion right now, and obviously an every week starter for fantasy use. But bigger point being, they have to dial back his usage because running backs just can't keep doing what he's doing.
Running back Philip Lindsay of the Denver Broncos has re-emerged, I think maybe 114 yards and a score against the Chargers last week, had a couple of catches as well. Should I be going out to buy Philip Lindsay from whomever picked him up, or should I be selling him high?
He's so good. Philip Lindsay is awesome. And the fact that the Broncos keep giving him split carries evenly with Royce, drop the piano Freeman is ridiculous. You know, it's Freeman gives you nothing but whatever his offensive line gives him. He's a shiftless, straight-ahead, plodding runner. And then they hand the ball off to Lindsay, and it's electric. He makes a guy miss. He's nimble. He's got the speed. He turns the three-yard gain into the eight-yard gain. It's night and day, and I got to believe that sooner or later, this thing is not going to be 50-50 for much longer. Remember, they started last year trying to do a roughly even timeshare, but Lindsay was just too good, and they ended up giving him the vast majority of the work. That's what Denver needs to do now, and I do think you buy on Lindsay on the prospect that sooner or later they just have to give their best running back way more than 50% of the carries.
I know you said there's really nobody on the waiver wire, but there was a guy whose name I kept hearing called, and he happened to be in a nationally televised game, and it was Byron Pringle of the Kansas City Chiefs. should we crack open the can there?
Freaking Byron and the Chiefs. I mean, every week. So if you'd have just chased the hot receiver every week, you never get the same guy twice. It was Sammy Watkins in week one, and then it was DeMarcus Robinson in week two, and then it was Mecole Hardman. Now we got Byron freaking Pringle. Come on, they're killing me with this. And now it's all going to get that much more confused. Tyreek Hill may be back this week, and if not this week, almost certainly next week. And super frustrating for fantasy owners. Sammy Watkins gets knocked out early in the game, and now it's all Byron Pringle. Do not go reaching for Byron Pringle. Watkins could come back. Hill could come back. That's the end of Pringle's run. That's the end of that.
The Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur experience has been an interesting one to watch. They had a whole bunch of touchdowns by a different Aaron this last week against Dallas. They thoroughly owned them, but Rodgers himself only has one game over 300 yards and six touchdowns total. Do you figure this picks up, or do you invest in Green Bay's running game?
So, you know, for Aaron Rodgers, this thing goes back. It's not just even this year and this offense. If you go back to week 10 of last year, Aaron Rodgers is one touchdown pass per game. That's it. And most fantasy owners, you know, you drafted Aaron Rodgers reasonably early, and he's Aaron Rodgers. He's going to the Hall of Fame, and you just automatically put him in your lineup. He is hurting you, and you have to be wise enough to be looking at these matchups. Now, related to that, Aaron Jones is really good. And for basically his whole career, we've been begging the Packers to use him like a workhorse and stop with the stupid Jamal Williams experiment and the 50-50 timeshare there, which is brutal. Williams is no good, and he finally gets hurt. And now we get to look at what happens when the Packers give all of the carries to Aaron Jones. He's great, and he pays off huge for his fantasy owners. We can only hope when Williams comes back, they do not go back to the timeshare, and they keep using Aaron Jones for most of those carries because he's really good, and they're getting a look at all the positivity that happens. They just smoked the Cowboys in Dallas. That's, you know, that is no small victory, and largely because of Aaron Jones.
Charge, thank you as always. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking next week.
It's been fun. We'll talk to you in a week. Bye-bye.
That's Paul Charchi in the bottom of the hour, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com.
Yeah, next week we'll talk to Charch. Hopefully there's more on the waiver wire, and we will deal with the economic policy of Chad. We're also going to get into that with Charchi. Mm-hmm. That's what we're into.
Yeah, good stuff, though. Good strong stuff.
No, it really was. When we come back, There's been some baseball discussion over the last couple of days here regarding something David Sampson said to somebody about an 18-year-old conversation that popped up, and Steve Stone came out strong on Twitter against them. I'm all Steve Stone. But Stoney also offered a tweet about the conclusion, the inevitable conclusion about the Twins-Yankees series in the playoffs that I kind of have to pick a bone with, and I'd love to. He knows so much more about baseball than I do, but I don't see where he's coming from here particularly, and I think this conversation might have something to do with the way that the Cubs are going to look to rebuild their offense in the coming season as well.
Speaking of baseball, Joe Sheehan is scheduled to join us at 1:20. You're thinking, wait, 1:20? What are you doing? Well, Lawrence Holmes is on vacation, so we're picking up the slack by also covering his hours today. And I think I said Thursday before, Friday.
Friday.
Friday, we're also going to do the same. And in our extended version here, we're going to talk to Dylan Strome of the Blackhawks just after noon. And we have some glorious Mike Leach sound to play, too. A huge, long chunk in the noon hour that we're going to play from Mike Leach and then Joe Sheehan. But some baseball talk is straight ahead on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Tanking only became a thing after I got into baseball. I always thought that it was a great plan to keep trying and to never be really bad and to keep looking like and hoping that you can make it and win a division or become a wild card. And only later, really when the Astros started it and lost 100 games 3 years in a row, and even then I didn't agree with that plan because it was brutal when the Astros were losing all those games, and it was hard for any owner to take that. So I don't see anything wrong with what he told me. But the fact is, when he told me that the White Sox had finished in second place 4 years in a row, right before he told me that, so I get why that was in his head.
David Sampson, the guy who used to be in charge of the Florida/Miami Marlins, on this morning on the Mully and Haw show. This is all, it's been almost a, just a ridiculous non-story of a story.
It was a good conversation. Yeah,
No, the conversation.
Yes,
I thought that was actually has been more interesting than the supposed story that has existed.
David Sampson seems to me a guy that is happy to say whatever is easiest and most convenient for him in whatever conversation he's having at the moment. Just whatever gets him the most. The biggest laugh or out of the most trouble or the most interesting reaction he can find in a conversation, that's what he's looking to say in that moment. And he's going to get out of whatever situation he's in by saying whatever's most convenient to him. And then he moves on and does the same thing with the next conversation and really isn't concerned if one thing, you know, fights with the other in terms of ideas. He doesn't really care.
He did a nice job parrying away some of the conflict by kind of
He's good at embracing it.
Yeah, he was. It's not personal, and I know he's got to say this, and he's got to say that, and I'm not worried about it.
So this idea of finishing second each and every year so that a carrot is out there for your fan base is a conversation that happened 18 years ago. And I get why it went as big with White Sox Twitter as it did. I mean, because this was a thing, right? But remember what this does. I mean, really, it stokes the fear that exists around the White Sox not getting Manny Machado the way they didn't get Manny Machado, and the fear that will exist when you get into this next offseason about whether or not the White Sox are going to be able to pony up the money to go sign Gerrit Cole or Nolan Arenado or what have you. That's what this statement does. That's why it caught on as concretely as it did with White Sox fans. Is the very thing that you're most worried about for the immediate future of your rebuilding and kind of bright young core. Is that. It's exactly that.
Yeah, but I also think there's been incredible confusion and a lack of understanding of nuance where...
Both are true.
It can be fine to say that, yeah, finishing second's great because it accomplishes, it gets you close enough and people are still excited about the possibility of winning, but it doesn't mean that that was what you were trying to do.
It's very hard to try and finish second in baseball.
Right.
The fact that he doesn't even have that benefit of the doubt, doesn't that say something?
Well, that's going to be there no matter what. Like I was listening this morning, as I always do, and the very first call that comes in was like some guy was calling from 1998, and it was like, Jerry Reinsdorf broke up the Bulls, and that's why you don't trust him. It was like, oh, God. And it brings all the old tropes of exactly what was trotted out when he and Eddie Einhorn bought the White Sox in the first place, and the very same things that have underpinned a lot of this stuff for years about he doesn't want to spend money because they're cheap. Well, you know where that all comes from.
Yeah, Jerry Reinsdorf has a reputation in the league. He's been an influential figure in shaping its past and its future. He has been a voice, a very loud and important voice in terms of ownerships and how the league tries to direct itself. That is inarguable. That is in evidence. It happened. That exists. He also has a team that won a World Series in 2005. And a team that, after doing that, invested in its payroll and got it to a level at which the White Sox had never really been before. I mean, they were a top five, if not top seven, I think, payroll team for the next two seasons after they'd won a World Series.
But you mentioned that there was a different Steve Stone tweet that you wanted to get to.
Yeah, there was. He was tweeting about the inevitable dismissal of the Minnesota Twins from the playoffs by the New York Yankees. Let me just read you. Let's do some names. Let's talk about some names for a second. This was on Deadspin. The last time the Minnesota Twins won a playoff game, Shannon Stewart knocked in Michael Kadire for the go-ahead run. Jock Jones homered, and Johan Santana threw seven scoreless as the Twins beat the Yankees in Game 1 of the 2004 ALDS. The next night, Hideki Matsui singled off J.C. Romero to score Derek Jeter in the 12th, and that was it. They ain't won a playoff game since. That's a long time.
Wow.
That's a really long time. Derek Falvey now runs most of the baseball operations for the Minnesota Twins. They had an amazing season offensively. And it's been thrown out there that the team that homers a lot can't win in the playoffs, that that stuff doesn't work.
The team that homers a lot usually wins the World Series.
That's the true part. You ball go far, team go far, right? We've been yelling this for a little while. And the idea of this Minnesota Twins offense not being a complete one is insane to me. So they lose to the Yankees, right? Do you know the difference between the Yankees offense and Twins offense in 2019?
Was it like two home runs
or
something?
It's like nothing.
Yeah.
They
both broke the old record.
Listen to how close all of these numbers are. The Minnesota Twins last year hit 307 home runs and hit a major league record. The Yankees hit 306. The Minnesota Twins, as a team, hit 270. The Yankees hit 267. As a team, the Minnesota Twins, 338 on base. The Yankees were 339. As a team, the OPS plus for Minnesota, 117.
Wow.
The Yankees, 118.
Same team.
The batting average,
same offense.
Runners in scoring position for the team. The Minnesota Twins were 292. The Yankees were 294. These offenses, at least
identical.
I can't do the swing paths for you. I can't put you in a slow motion tank. You know, I can't figure out identical.
Identical.
I mean, these are the same two offensive production numbers. These are the same two top to bottom 1 through 9 lineups. It's just that the Yankees have been, what was the Mark Schlereth line from the broadcast Sunday? They've been touched by God. They've been touched by God, and the Minnesota Twins are apparently destined to be dragged into playoff hell each and every fall.
To play in the NFL, you must be touched by God.
I find it fascinating. I find it really fascinating. What I think the difference is, and Minnesota I think will get there because they've committed to it, but I think the difference is the Yankees assembled a whole bunch of really hard throwers in the bullpen. The Twins are on their way to doing that. They have some of those guys, but I don't think they have as many or as good a ones as the Yankees did.
When you turn on the TV during these playoffs, I don't care what series you're watching, in fifth inning or later, there are so many holy crap pitches being thrown. So many. Whether it was the Cardinals and the Braves or Charlie Morton, who's some kind of wizard with what he is doing with the spin rate and the movement of his pitches. I guess I watched so much Cubs baseball this year, I forgot what it looked like. Because they didn't have anybody throwing the oh-my-God pitches. Darvish on occasion. Darvish would have that kind of stuff.
On occasion.
And then
Rowenwick and Bradwick would come out
hard.
There. And instead of saying...
But not these sliders that you go, oh my God, what was that? How could anybody ever hit that?
No.
Ever.
No. Instead, it was when the Wick guys were out there and you didn't say, oh my God. You said, oh, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. That's finally a representative major league pitch.
That looks good. Let's throw more of those.
But so much of this now is like, you got no chance. And we're going to talk to Sheehan about it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But this thing about this hometown or in-town stupidity of inability to get a hit in a critical situation, the strikeouts in critical situations, you know where else that's happening? Everywhere.
All over.
Bases loaded, first and third, two out. You know, that's when the strikeouts are coming because that's when strikeout guy comes in. That's when the guy with the 94-mile-an-hour slider that's tunneled up exactly with his fastball that moves in the opposite direction comes in.
The Cardinals wriggled out of two separate bases loaded occasions just the other day.
Strikeouts, just yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, that's baseball. That's playoff baseball to me. It's the stuff that gets guys out without any contact whatsoever. It's the strikeout. That absolutely. And it's acquiring 8 of those guys so that you can burn through 5 of them in a playoff series or in a playoff run, I mean. And then you have 4 more to take their place next season because inevitably 3 of those guys that you ran through aren't going to be good the next year because that's how baseball works. And then one will get hurt. You need to continue the pipeline of those 95 and 96 mile an hour fastballs paired up with that slider. You just have to have 5 or 6 of those guys ready to go each and every year, throw them at the big leagues, find which two of them are mature enough and understand pitching enough and delivery and mechanics enough to repeat it. And that's your bullpen for a season.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is edit. Text edit to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is edit to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Blackhawks, the start of their season, their expectations for this year, the home opener, all of it with centerman Dylan Strome. So keep it here. We're on for another 2 hours today and Friday, covering for the vacationing Lawrence Holmes and the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High hopes. Streaming on Hulu.